Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It's a big day. The midterm primary will narrow in on crucial races to lead California statewide as well as on a national level, from the governor to the state attorney general and key races for congressional seats. But today also won't just narrow in, but likely will be a final decision for important local races. In some cities, it could be the mayor. In Sacramento County, for example, we could find out who'll become the new Sacramento County sheriff and district attorney, which means if your ballot is still unopened at home, today is an important final day to shape the decisions that impact your lives. Joining us is CAP Radio's Sarah Mises-Tan, who's been tracking the primary traffic. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Vicky. Good to be here.
So what polling place are you at right now?
I'm at the Oak Park Community Center right now. It's the second polling place that I've been to this morning, and I'm kind of seeing voters coming in little surges, I guess I'd say. We have some moments of quiet where no one comes in, and then we have a moment where we'll see a couple, so maybe like 5 or 10 folks come in all at once. So
yeah.
It's been an interesting morning.
Yes, people are going to work.
Yeah.
So we've had mail-in ballots in hand for maybe about 3 weeks or so. What has the appetite been for in-person voting this morning? I mean, as you were just talking about, mornings can be kind of like a little bit of a surge or a trickle at times, but kind of a popular time to walk in before people head to work.
Yeah, I've definitely seen a lot. I think with the folks who are coming in, the majority of folks who are coming in to just drop their ballot in the ballot box. I see very few folks actually going into the polling center and actually casting a vote there. So I have seen a couple folks do that. And actually, the first person I spoke to this morning was someone who wanted to come in, do it all old school, not use a touch screen, actually like write down and check off the boxes. And they just mentioned that they did that because they had lost their ballot and this was the most reliable way for them to do that. But yeah, I've definitely heard that. I think folks seem to want to come in and put their ballot in the actual ballot box if they're like worried that it's going to get lost in the mail, or they've lost the envelope, or they're worried they don't have the right envelope. Just like little administrative things like that, I think, are the main reasons for why people are coming in this morning.
Yeah, getting that peace of mind. When it comes to voting in person, that person reminds me of my dad, actually, who's probably going to be doing that today. Overall, with those that you've spoken with, because you've been to two polling locations, is there a common theme that you're hearing?
You know, I am generally hearing folks, actually, when I ask them about issues that they're particularly interested in following, things like that, I've had a couple of folks mention that California is a bit of a safe space, and so a lot of the issues that they are following on a national level are not issues of concern for them as Californians, which I thought was interesting. And I guess I also heard that there are a couple of folks who are really engaged about like some of those like particular statewide elections, which we can get into. But
so you spoke with one of the voters and you sent in some sound. So we're going to take a quick listen. This is Laurel Herrera from Oak Park.
Why do you think it's important to come out and vote during the primaries and not just the general?
All of it impacts where we get after the general election. So, you know, each step is important, even though it might feel like a foregone conclusion, it still is a part of it. So that's why.
And any, what are you seeing in terms of like your friends, family, colleagues? Like, are they similarly engaged? Were they not excited this round?
Yeah, I would say there's not a ton of excitement because it doesn't seem like anything is that contentious where we are. But still, I think most of my friends in my group are pretty engaged and want to make sure that we just stay part of it throughout the cycle.
I would imagine, Sarah, that Laurel wasn't probably the only person you heard that from when it comes to, you know, maybe a lack of enthusiasm or even knowledge that today's a big day. It's the final day for the primary midterms.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of the folks, like you said, that I spoke with are, I think, very much sided with what Laurel said. But I did speak with a couple folks who were very particular about some issues. I spoke with a parent who was very interested in the State Board of Education race. She said that she knew that, you know, it wasn't necessarily the local Sacramento School Board of Education race, but that her child had been impacted by the teacher strikes. And she thought that, you know, getting representation from the top could trickle down into what Sacramento would be seeing. So I thought that was interesting. And I also had someone talk about just their interest in the sheriff's race and the district attorney's race, which is a race I've been following.
Yeah, that was going to bring me to the district attorney's race. You've closely been following it and you interviewed both candidates. It could be decided after the primary today. What stands out to you about this race?
I think, A, it's just an office that doesn't turn over very often. As you know, I think a lot of people know, Anne Marie Schubert held the district attorney position for nearly a decade. And before that, we had the same district attorney, Jan Scully, for 2 decades. So, you know, whoever is elected in this cycle will most likely hold this office for a good chunk of years. So I think that is why it's a very important race. I also think it's a race that absolutely could be decided by the primary election, just because there are only 2 candidates, Tin Ho and Alana Matthews. And I also think that it is a historic race because both candidates are candidates of color, and that is something that Sacramento just hasn't had. We haven't had the perspective of a Black woman as district attorney or an Asian American man or woman as district attorney. So I think those are the couple of reasons why I'm personally interested to see how the district attorney's race shakes out.
They're important reasons. Finally, Sarah, for those listening who perhaps are mulling over or weren't planning to cast a ballot today, you know, you're out talking with those who are making the time and the investment. Why was it important for them to show up? And maybe that'll pay dividends for those who are listening.
Oh, yeah. You know, a lot of folks did mention that they have just, you know, it's been since 2020, I think it's been. It's certainly a cycle where I think a lot of people really woke up and realized, oh, civic engagement, civic involvement really does matter. I've heard from a lot of people that just the action of exercising your democratic right as an American citizen is very important to them. And it's something that, you know, we need to use in order to keep it. So I've absolutely heard that as an argument. And then I've also heard that the primary election is what leads up to the general election. So if you are unhappy with the way our country or our state is being run, voting right now is absolutely an important time to come out and vote.
Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thanks so much, Vicki.
That is CAP Radio reporter Sarah Mises Tan. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. We're sticking with the primary, but we're going to focus on election outreach to an overlooked voting group, the unhoused community. Voters across the region, including thousands without a permanent home, can legally take part in today's primary election. CAP Radio reporter Chris Nichols joins us to explain how people experiencing homelessness can vote. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Vicki. It's great to be here.
So a little bit of background on this. I don't think it's necessarily well known that people without a permanent address can register and cast a ballot.
You're right. I don't think that that's common knowledge. I think that most people do know you need to be 18 and a U.S. citizen. But over the past 4 decades, state and federal courts have ruled that people who are homeless cannot be denied the right to vote simply because they lack a roof over their head. Courts have ruled that unhoused people can register to vote by listing their address as a shelter or even a more general location, such as a park where they sleep. And this is all according to the National Coalition for the Homeless, a group that works to prevent and end homelessness.
Your reporting includes Sacramento County election officials encouraging unhoused residents to register. But what does outreach look like and how does the process work?
Well, they're in touch with service providers that work with people who are homeless to explain this process. They also issued a news release about it this past month. Sacramento County election spokesperson Jana Haynes told me the county has already sent out more than 450 ballots to unhoused residents who are already registered and live at shelters or use a service provider's address. But Haynes says that people who are unsheltered can also register at any local vote center, and they don't have to submit a numerical address.
It can be an intersection, a street corner, a park, or some other identifiable landmark that they are used to, that they reside by, and we can issue them a ballot in their name in that specific precinct so that they can cast a ballot for the election.
I mean, you were talking about 450 ballots to unhoused residents who are already registered, but considering the number of the unhoused community just in Sacramento County alone, I mean, do we actually have a percentage of unhoused individuals that actually participate and register to vote?
You know, I don't have complete numbers on this, but when you consider the 450 or so ballots that went out to people who live at those shelters, that's just a small fraction, of course, of the thousands of people who are experiencing homelessness in the county. That overall estimate stood at 5,500 3 years ago. And later this month, a new survey is expected to tell us the current population estimate, and many believe it will be much higher.
Yeah. What about nationally? Do we have numbers for voting and people who are experiencing homelessness?
The figure I came across nationally is about 10%, which is much lower than the 54% share of the country's voting age population that votes in elections. And those figures are from the University of Southern California.
You know, you actually went out and you spoke with several people last week who are experiencing homelessness or were formerly unhoused at Cesar Chavez Plaza in downtown Sacramento. Were they even aware that they could register to vote?
Yes, some of them were aware. Some said that they closely follow civic issues, including at City Hall right across from the plaza. Several told me they were already registered or at least would be interested in doing so. Chris Williams provided a slightly different perspective. He told me he spent several years living on the streets. He now has a home. When he was unhoused, he says he really didn't think about voting. He is registered now, but Williams told me that most people who live outdoors are just trying to survive.
They're struggling, it's hard, and their vote, in my mind, they think is not going to change anything because they've seen it, you know, the promises, everything. And if they vote whichever way, left or right or wherever, they don't think it's going to make a difference.
Well, on that note, Chris, where could someone who potentially is homeless and lives near downtown, where can they go to register to vote?
Well, like anyone else, they can go to a local vote center to both register and cast their ballot today. And that's because Californians, no matter their address, can register to vote up to and including on Election Day. There are a number of vote centers where you can do that. But in downtown, there's the California Museum at 10th and O Streets. There's the County Administration Building on 8th and H Streets. And then, of course, there are churches and community centers across the region that are serving as vote centers as well. And finally, on our online CAP Radio Voter Guide, you can go check out the links right there to help you find those locations.
That is CAP Radio reporter Chris Nichols. Chris, thanks for the time.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Vicki.
Up next, the California Voter Foundation joins us with some last-minute FAQs for voting and even registering to vote. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. Mail-in ballots started being mailed out on May 9th to every registered voter in California. That's nearly a month ago. In that time, of the nearly 22 million ballots delivered statewide, 15% have been returned, and that's according to a morning update from the voting tracking firm Political Data. That's a little over 3 million ballots. Midterm primaries historically have lower turnout compared to a presidential election year. However, the concern is this primary is showing even less enthusiasm than midterm primaries past. But there is still time as of this morning, 10 hours and some change. Kim Alexander is the founder of the California Voter Foundation and joins us with some last minute tips. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Vicky. Nice to be here with you.
Nice to have you. Well, I was talking with a friend yesterday evening about, you know, anecdotally having to remind people that there's a midterm primary today, June 7th. They're registered to vote, which means they received a ballot. I mean, but you have the statewide lens. Is this a case across California?
I think this election is catching a lot of people by surprise. I mean, some people like myself have received literally pounds of campaign mail. I counted up my mailers this morning. There are 73 of them. They cost about $1 a piece to mail. So that's $73 that has been spent trying to get me to vote. But that's because I vote in every election and I've lived in the same address for 20 years. And as Chris Nichols was reporting earlier with people who are housing insecure, you know, if you move around a lot or you're new to voting, campaigns are not courting you. They're not reaching out to you. And so it's really important that people who are engaged realize that there may be people at their workplace or people in their neighborhood who really aren't aware that the election's happening today and they need an extra nudge.
Yeah. Well, there's still a good amount of time to vote today. You can even register in person. So let's run through some key last minute tips. When it comes to registering to vote today, how does that actually work?
Well, our county, Sacramento, and a growing number of other counties are now Voters' Choice Act counties, which means that the voting sites that they've set up are networked with the county election office in real time. And that means that you can show up if you lost your ballot. Like I was in a meeting yesterday with a bunch of people who work in state government and nonprofits, and we're all very engaged in the election and voting. And people are like, wait a minute, I don't know where my ballot is. So, you know, if you're looking for your ballot today, you are in good company and you can still go to a voting site and vote a ballot there. If you're in a vote center county like Sacramento, they will cancel the ballot that you were issued and provide you a new ballot in real time. And so you can just actually vote right there and vote a regular ballot. If you are in a polling place county like Placer and they don't have that connectivity, then they will ask you to vote a provisional ballot. But nobody will be turned away. Don't let your inability to lay your hands on the vote by mail ballot that you got in the mail prevent you from voting today. You still have plenty of options.
And what you're touching upon is that voting in person can vary across the state. I mean, we broadcast at Cap Radio to a wide ranging area. I mean, not only Sacramento, but to the North State, through the Sierra foothills towards Yosemite. I mean, if you're living in this wide ranging area, kind of walk them through what they need to know today if they want to physically vote in a polling place.
Well, the good news is no matter where you live in California, you have the right and the ability to vote in person today. You can vote at a polling place if you're in Placer County, for example. They're using the traditional neighborhood polling place approach. So you are assigned to one polling place, and that's where you would go and vote your ballot. If you can't get to that polling place, you can still vote at any polling place in your county. And you may not be able to vote on every contest on your ballot, but you can vote on the statewide contest, countywide contest. So again, nobody's going to be turned away. The counties that have moved to the Voters' Choice Act model have countywide vote centers that are fewer in number, but they're available to all voters countywide and they're networked, as I said earlier. So you can do things in real time, register to vote and update your registration and cancel your ballot that had been issued prior and vote a regular ballot. So they have a little bit more services available, but everywhere in the state you can vote in person. And if you're not sure where, you can call your county elections office and they'll help you find out.
For those who are actually registered, they can still likely have a mail-in ballot sitting at home. I mean, full disclosure, was one of those who filled it out last night with my husband. So for those who want to vote from home today and mail it in, when's the deadline?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So a lot of people do have those ballots. They haven't turned them in. A lot of people, I think, have really waited to vote this election, and for good reason. This is a really long, complicated ballot. A lot of important choices, a lot of local contests that are very hotly fought out this year. And so, yeah, people have been waiting to vote. And so if you're in that boat and you have your ballot and you want to get it in, you have a couple ways to do that. You can fill it out and take it to a drop box at your county, or actually in any county in the state, and they'll get it to your home county if you're not at home. Or you can take it to a voting site, which, as your earlier correspondent noted, people like the satisfaction of taking their ballot in and turning it into a live person. So you have that option. You can take it to any voting site in your county or the state, or you can mail it today. But that's the riskiest thing to do, because you're not guaranteed, just because you put a ballot in a mailbox today, that it's going to get postmarked today. And it has to be postmarked today if it's going to get counted. So if you do want to mail it, the safest thing to do is to check that inside flap on the mailbox and make sure it hasn't been picked up yet before you drop it in, or take it to a post office, take it up to the counter, ask them to hand cancel it, and that'll make sure it gets postmarked today.
Given that your foundation has really been doing, you know, like a full court press with outreach and engagement, and you have a voter guide, you have last minute tips, are there any other kind of big bullet points that we're missing for people who want to vote today?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing that we need to do is provide funding in the state budget so that people who are not being reached out to by campaigns are still getting the message that they need to vote. I mean, we have really created this, you know, bifurcated system where if you're a regular voter, you get tons of mail and tons of attention. And if you're new to voting or you're an infrequent voter, nobody's asking for your vote. And we need to have an intervention. And the last two statewide elections, both the 2020 general election and the 2021 recall election, Governor Newsom and the legislature allocated tens of millions of dollars for the Secretary of State to spend on voter education and outreach. And we saw that investment pay off with higher turnout and more people engaged. This is the first election in a couple years where we haven't seen that. And we are seeing people not being engaged. What a surprise. So we are asking the legislature to allocate $85 million in the state budget for state and local voter education and outreach. And Cap Radio listeners who are concerned about low voter turnout, I urge you to contact your state lawmaker and ask them to support this budget ask we're making with the League of Women Voters and Disability Rights California and all these other voter advocacy groups who don't want to see people left behind in this vote by mail. You know, everybody gets a ballot world. It's great for some people, but not everybody trusts the mail. Not everybody's familiar with making a signature or using the post office. So we really need to make sure that everybody feels welcome and invited to vote in California.
Well, the state budget deadline is a little over a week away. It's next week. I mean, what are the odds that it'll be included? You're talking about $85 million.
You know, on the one hand, we have this unprecedented historic budget surplus of almost $100 billion. And it seems like it's not that much to ask that this additional investment be made, especially as we look at the demographics of who votes and who doesn't vote in California. You know, we are leaving behind people of color, young people, people with disabilities, first time voters, people who are new English language speakers. So, you know, we are at risk of becoming a state where the people who vote in California don't look like the people who live in California. In fact, we already are living in that state. And so I think that the lawmakers who pay so much lip service to equity and inclusion, they need to put their money where their mouth is and start making this investment and showing that they do want to make sure that people aren't left behind. If you are not voting, you are not using the most peaceful, effective method for conflict resolution that human society has come up with. And so that's, you know, we're seeing this corresponding, you know, rise in mass shootings and people becoming more violent and mean. And if we want to counter that, we need to have people turn to voting, turn to the voting process and engaging in elections in a civil way to make their voices heard and feel like they have a stake in what's going on.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Kim Alexander with the California Voter Foundation. Looking ahead, what larger conversations are taking place? Because, you know, after today, we're about 5 months until the midterm general election when it comes to, you know, the advocacy groups like yourself, outreach and engagement.
Well, in addition to this budget ask, you know, we're watching very closely this experiment of mailing everybody a ballot. You know, we've done this for the last two elections also, and it went pretty well in the two pandemic elections that we had in 2020 and 2021. Now we've mailed out, as you mentioned earlier, almost 22 million ballots. Only 3 million of them have been returned, a little over 3 million so far. So that is going to, I think, leave some people wondering, is this the right way to go? You know, that's a lot of ballots out there that are not getting used, and people not connecting with their ballot. So I think there may be some looking at that. And, you know, we're looking ahead to November. We're hoping we'll see a stronger turnout for November. And as of for today, you know, the good news is that all of our voting sites are open till 8 p.m. and people can go and vote all the way up until that point. And hopefully people will exercise their right to vote and get out there and encourage their friends too, and give, as I said earlier, a few other people a nudge.
You know, given that you refounded this foundation, you know, nearly 30 years ago, with that hindsight of perspective, what is the work that I guess what progress has been done in that time? Because, you know, we're also talking about more work that needs to be done.
Yeah, I mean, there's always more to be done with elections, but I think where California has really achieved well is in election security, especially when you compare how we do things here to other states. There was a time when we had paperless electronic voting in California, and California Voter Foundation and many other groups opposed that and worked hard to eliminate it. And now we have paper ballots, we have post-election audits, we have a very transparent process. Unfortunately, some people are questioning election security, even though we've done all of this. So I think we have more work to do to educate people, to overcome election mis and disinformation, which is another reason we want lawmakers to appropriate funding to state and local election officials, because those are the people who voters trust. You know, they're impartial, they're sending out reliable information, and we want to empower them so that they can counter these untruths that people are hearing about our election security. Hmm.
What are the broader consequences if turnout remains the same, despite making it easier than ever to participate? Didn't even need to put a stamp on the mail-in ballot.
Well, we already paid for postage, and we already, you know, we've done a lot of other things to protect voting and encourage voting. I think that really we have to look at the culture of politics in California. And ultimately, you know, politicians pay a lot of lip service to voter participation and engaging everybody. But when it comes down to it, they're running political campaigns too, and they don't necessarily, more importantly, their consultants don't necessarily care if everybody votes or not. In fact, sometimes they like it when fewer people vote because it makes it easier for them to try to control the outcome of the election. So I think we have to be honest about, you know, what is driving our elections, the money behind our elections that pays for these mailers, the consultants that decide who gets informed and who doesn't get informed, and the warping impact that that's having on California's electorate. We need to come up with a better solution. And that's why we want this budget intervention to arrest this trend, because this is not my first California primary where we've seen a low turnout. It's often the case that this particular election, the midterm primary, we see this low turnout. And that's a huge problem because this ballot has all these local contests on it as well. And those really impact people's lives and their experience living in their community. So we really need to, you know, not accept the idea, as I've heard around Sacramento in the last couple of days, that, oh, this is the norm. You know, this is that we have low turnout in this particular primary election. We can't accept that. And we're going to all have to work a lot harder to turn this around so that we have not just more people voting, but everybody in California represented among California voters. We don't want to have an electorate in California that's made up of only homeowners or only wealthy people or only educated people or only white people. And that's the trend that we're going in right now. So I think that we really have a lot of work ahead of us to build the equity and inclusion into, you know, the nuts and bolts of our voting system, not just in the way that it operates, but the way campaigns operate, the way politicians operate with voters. We could do with a lot of reform in that area, too.
Finally, you know, I started with a conversation I had with my friend, and I just think we also individually have a role in this. How do we talk to someone we love or a friend or a coworker and kind of help motivate someone to vote if they're not necessarily engaged?
Oh, that is such a great question, Vicky, and I'm so glad you brought that up because, you know, I think there's two kinds of voters out there. There's the regular voters who have a sense of what's going on and feel confident. And then there's the occasional or infrequent first-time voters who don't really understand what's going on. And we can't tell people It's easy to vote, because if you look at our ballot, I mean, I have 23 contests on my ballot, 124 candidates. I mean, that is overwhelming to some people. So what I like to tell people is, number one, if you're not voting, I'm not going to judge you. I just want to know why you're not voting and try to find out like what's keeping them from voting. I also say, number two, you don't have to vote on everything on the ballot. In fact, you can fill out, you can submit a blank ballot and still be a voter. And number three, the reason you want to do that is because politicians pay attention to who votes. And if you and people like you who are young, people of color, lower income, people who are housing insecure, if you're not voting, guess what? Politicians are not going to care about the issues that impact your life. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if you want to have a voice, if you want people like you to have a voice, you need to be a voter. And that doesn't mean you have to have an answer for everything on the ballot, but it does mean you need to take the time and make the effort to submit a ballot and make your voice heard. And see, the other thing people say is, I don't want to make the wrong choice. You know, I'm worried I'm going to vote for someone and find out later that's not the person I wanted. It's okay to skip that contest if you're really not confident. So I really want to make sure people know it's perfectly fine to leave a couple things blank when you vote.
Yeah, it really is an equalizer. We all get one. We all get a vote.
That's right. That's right.
Kim, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Kim Alexander is the founder of the California Voter Foundation, giving us some last minute tips for Election Day. Still ahead, this weekend, Capitol Mall will transform into the annual Sacramento Pride March and Festival. We'll get a preview of what to expect and how the past year is shaping a celebration of LGBTQ+ culture as well as activism. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Pride Month is underway, a vibrant celebration highlighting the progress made in the fight for justice and inclusion for the LGBTQ+ community. But it's also a time to focus on the work that still needs to be done. This year's Pride celebration comes at a poignant time, after a wave of anti-LGBTQ+ legislation has been either introduced or signed into law across the country. According to the Human Rights Campaign, more than 300 of these bills have been introduced in 28 states. So what does the Pride movement mean today in the face of these challenges? And how can people show their support beyond rainbow social media icons and hashtags? I have a temporary tattoo right now that says love wins with the rainbow. So we're going to learn more about what the Pride movement means today. And joining us to help answer these questions are members of Sacramento Pride. They're also going to share more details on this weekend's Sacramento Pride March and Festival being held fully in person for the first time in 2 years. So with that, we welcome Jason Alviar, Colin Lorenko, and Camille Adams. Welcome all to Insight. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, Jason.
Good morning, Vic.
Good morning. Jason, I want to start with you. This is going to be the first Sacramento Pride March and Festival the community will celebrate fully in person in 2 years, which must just feel so good. So how does it feel to have this celebration return in full swing?
It feels great, especially, like you said, after 2 years, which felt like forever, for the LGBTQ community to not only just be able to just fully celebrate together and just be together as a community And, you know, to say that, like, the team and I are excited would be an understatement. We have been wanting to put this event on since we couldn't back in 2020 and then couldn't again in 2021. So 2022, this is the year that it's going to be just fantastic.
Colin, what can people expect when they attend the festival this weekend? And what's going to be different this year compared to previous years?
It's a great question. Well, at the festival this year, you can fully expect there to be fabulous entertainment, great food vendors, great exhibitors that show off all of the different local businesses and different flavors, sights, and sounds of Sacramento and the greater LGBT community. What'll be a little bit different this year is we have kind of rebranded a few of our areas on our map. We've also completely changed the layout. We understand it's going to be a hot one this weekend, so we've made sure to put things in the shade. We've added a wellness area. We have a youth and family area that has lots of great activations, as well as we have two large stages and a youth-centered stage. And those two stages have a varied amount of entertainment and talent lineup, primarily sourced right here in our own backyard.
That's great. Yeah, we've definitely had a weather 180 from one weekend to the next. Camille, what are you most excited about? What are you looking forward to this weekend?
Well, my role in this organization and organizing this event was to really focus on the entertainment and the stage shows. And I just really wanted to focus on it, all of us. We wanted to focus on POC local artists this year. We wanted to make sure that our stages represented our diverse and beautiful community. And we have some amazing performers from the region, and they deserve to be showcased and paid and supported and elevated. So we have lots of really great bands that are going to get you up and dancing, a good mix of soul, funk, Latin, and all kinds of stuff. We also have fashion shows, a Vogue showcase, multiple local DJs, and even a full cabaret show by Sac Dance Lab. I will say, as far as my favorite and what I'm probably the most excited about, and I'm a little biased as I'm from New Mexico and I am Latina, and I am so excited to have a little taste of home by showcasing the Mariachis Bonitas, and they are an all-female mariachi group here in Northern California.
I love that one. That is awesome. Yeah. Yeah, Jason, you know, we're also still in a pandemic or endemic. And I mean, this comes as Sacramento County, along with the rest of the state, has recently seen an increase in COVID cases over the last, you know, few weeks. What are you all doing to ensure both a safe and an inclusive environment for those who want to participate in the festival? And actually, I think, Colin, I'm going to hand that to you.
Absolutely. So few things that we're doing a little differently in order to ensure the safety for all of our guests and attendees, as well as our amazing arsenal of staff and volunteers who will be working the event, is we are requiring proof of vaccination or a negative test result from 48 hours prior to the entry of the festival gates, as well as we are partnering with the county to provide boosters and rapid testing at no cost right outside of our main entrance that will be available both days of the event. Hmm.
Jason, this year's Pride celebration in California comes as transgender rights are being curtailed and threatened in other states. Does this year's Pride have a deeper or added meaning given what's happening across the country?
Yeah, absolutely. Pride celebrations definitely across the country are going to have such a deeper meaning for youth and families that are being affected by states whose legislators are actively writing and passing laws that undermine people in LGBTQ communities' rights to exist. So to say that this year's Pride is going to have more meaning is also another understatement, you know, because we're dealing with so many different legislators just actively trying to just take away people's rights. And we want to make sure that we're even more visible, we're even louder, and like now more than ever, you know, the Pride March aspect of Pride is going to mean so much more.
Yeah, we need a reminder also of why Pride Month came about and festivals and marches and activism. Because Camille, many people are familiar with the police raid at Stonewall Inn back in 1969. That's credited for really igniting the LGBTQ plus equality movement nationwide. However, there was another police raid here in Sacramento back in 1979. Can you tell us more about that specific incident and how it inspired the Pride movement here locally?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in 1979, that was a pivotal year for Sacramento's LGBTQ plus community. In March of 79, police raided the popular gay club. It was called Upstairs Downstairs, and they were harassing patrons, instilling fear into their patrons. That was a multiple day raid. They had no offense disclosed, and ultimately resulted in them opening and pouring out every bottle of alcohol in the bar. They had a beer and wine license, and in order to quote unquote check the make sure they weren't selling liquor, they essentially devastated them financially, and creating fear into our queer community. That same year was actually there was a drive-by shooting at another gay establishment called Bojangles. And it was also the first year that Sacramento held Pride. And we had over 3,000 people march to the Capitol celebrating how far we had come since the 10 years prior with Stonewall, while also focusing on the activism and the work that still needed to be done. And honestly, this year we are continuing Pride in Sacramento with that same notion. Celebration meets activism, celebrating our achievements towards equality while also fighting to create a community where the LGBTQ plus people are safe and thrive. So, I mean, it's kind of what Sacramento Pride is, and it's a demonstration of power and love that we in this community is, it's just something that's worth fighting and worth celebrating, I think.
Yeah, you just think about all the progress that has been made and how much it's grown in the decades, but there are still, you know, some important and difficult conversations that are taking place within the community. Colin, in San Francisco, there was a disagreement between Pride organizers and the police department over allowing uniformed police officers to participate in the parade this year. A compromise was actually reached last week to allow officers to march in the parade after they were initially banned. I remember this conversation happened back in 2019 in Sacramento. Where Sacramento police, will they be able to participate? And if so, how?
Absolutely. So as our policy states for our festival is that SAC PD will not be welcome to participate in uniform. They will not host a march contingent or a booth, and will only be at the festival as required by local law to ensure safety or emergency response at the festival so that we can actually have the festival.
Can you provide our listeners with more background as to why that decision was made?
I think that Jason probably can help you out with that a little bit better.
All right, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in 2020, you know, as you know, the center announced its next steps to support racial justice. And as a center, we came together and basically just provided a way that, like, to keep communities safe and to keep them feeling more safe, we created an internal policy to no longer allow armed uniformed law enforcement officers at center facilities or events, including SAC Pride, as Colin stated, unless as a last resort or in a true emergency. We wanted to be cognizant and be understanding that, you know, police at Pride or police at any center event means different things to different people. And we wanted to make sure that everyone feels safe and everyone feels welcome. So the compromise of having non-uniformed police officers seemed like the best course of action for everyone in the community.
And this weekend isn't the only event that's happening this month. Jason, what are some other Pride events happening in Sacramento?
Oh, that's also a wonderful part about, you know, how tight-knit the local community and local businesses are. Just a couple of standout events that are happening over Pride Month. The show Out with our friends at B Street Theater is happening on June 10th. You can go and join that and, you know, stick around to see a wonderful show about, you know, the beauty of our community, and stick around for a forum. Track 7 Brewing Company in Curtis Park is having their Magic Market on June 18th. And Plastic Pub is having Sunday Pride fundraisers all Sunday. throughout the month of June that are going to benefit the center and that are going to just help celebrate Pride with mini golf and beer. That's always fun. And, you know, and all of these events and more, we're constantly updating our sacramentopride.org/community page. So if you're looking for stuff to do beyond Pride or before Pride, our Pride weekend, visit sacramentopride.org/community and see what you can do with your family.
Yeah, there are a lot of events and a lot of opportunities to participate and have fun. You know, Colin Camille was giving us the backstory, decades in the making. Sacramento Pride started small over 40 years ago, somewhat hidden event in a community park, to now a citywide celebration, including more than 20,000 people across Northern California. That's so much progress. What are your goals and vision for the years to come?
That's a great question. As the event manager leading this project for this year, a vision we have is to continue to grow the footprint of the festival to be able to welcome more guests, as well as add to the march, really is what we would like to grow. Right now, we're seeing a little over 50 contingents in the march, meaning that the overall march and parade will last about an hour to 90 minutes, and I would love to see it grow to something like our neighbors in the West, or sort of like in San Francisco, yeah. Pride, where they have an all day march and parade. So that's something that we would like to be able to continue to grow. And ways we can do that is by outreach like this, where we're talking about what Pride is and what our goals are for Pride in our area, in our neighborhood of Sacramento. And get more folks to participate in viewing and also marching with us, and get more news media outlet coverage so people can really see all the great work and welcoming inclusion that is part of Sacramento Pride.
Yeah. Well, as we come to a close, I want to ask all of you this, because Pride Month gets a lot of attention from corporations, professional sports teams, even on social media during the month of June. But after Pride Month ends, what can listeners do to commemorate the struggles, celebrate the successes of the LGBTQ+ community after the month of June, after Pride Month ends? Camille?
I'm always going to say support queer art. I feel like art is a very healing thing, and it's a really great way for us as a community to be able to express ourselves in meaningful ways to folks inside and outside of our community. So always, always support queer artists, support queer creators, performers, bands, anything you can. I really do feel like we are becoming the next, I think we're coming into our next renaissance, and I really would like to see more of the queer artists uplifted in our community.
I love that. Jason, what about you?
Oh, there's, you know, supporting queer businesses, supporting local queer businesses, doing taking the time to read and learn and watch as much content as you can, just to kind of keep you up to date. And just, support local community, volunteer. Volunteer at places like the Sacramento LGBT Community Center. Selfless plug, but it's a wonderful way to, you know, get to know the community and a wonderful way to show support.
Yeah. Colin, what about you?
I'm going to have to hearken on what both Camille and Jason said when it comes to queer arts. It goes beyond just... going to a drag show. Make sure you take care of those performers that you see, or if you are working in an area where you're going to be hiring those performers, pay them equitably, as well as when it comes to supporting queer-owned establishments, patron those first over your big box stores, patron those first over your chain restaurants. And when you are in those spaces, treat people with respect and kindness, use correct pronouns or offer your pronouns. And then if you want to go even deeper, volunteering with local queer and queer BIPOC organizations is a really great way to be part of the community and give back.
Yeah, a little house.
And vote.
Oh, and vote. Yeah, exactly. Especially it's election day. Yeah, we've been hitting that home like for the last, you know, few weeks or so, especially today. Just a quick housekeeping item. If you want to go to the Pride March and Festival this weekend, does it cost anything? Colin?
So to go to the Pride March, that is free to, there's no entry gate. There's no ticket required for the march, which is Sunday at 11 a.m. starting at Southside Park and continuing along 10th Street, ending at the west steps of the Capitol building at 10th and Capitol. However, to enter the festival grounds, which is on both Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 8, there is tickets available at sacramentopride.org/tickets.
Well, that is Colin Lorenko, Jason Alviar, and Camille Adams. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great time this weekend.
Thank you, Vicki.
They're giving us a preview of this weekend's Sacramento Pride March and Festival that is Saturday and Sunday. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. Thank you to producers Nick Dobis and Victor Corral Martinez, with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Megan Minata. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineer, Antonio Munez. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's Chief Content Officer. And I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Polls close at 8 p.m., so please vote. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.